Okay, everyone, welcome. Let's do this. We're going to do now, starting episode 2 of Key to Redemption in Our Hands. We're going to be learning the Rebbe's talks of the last year, 57, that he spoke to us, 57-51. That's 1991. After the earth-shattering talk in which he said, listen here, it's up to us now. He's given it over to us. And it seems like he's not been kidding because he's still waiting for us to get the job done. But then he gave us all the instructions in the talks following from the month of Iyar through the month of Adar. We have a whole series of mind-blowing talks to open us up and to prepare us for the most important task of all of history, in which we are all participating in. Whoever wants to be part of this, and anybody that has the merit to be part of this, and really it's available for each and every human being, we can all be part of this amazing work. So let's take a look on what the insight we get last in this week's talk. This week, as it comes out this year, it's a double portion, Acharei Mos and Kedoshim, the double portion of the Torah. So on the Shabbos Vabrengen, this was the third Shabbos after that intense talk. So the first Shabbos, the Rebbe didn't address it that much. It was only 2 days after the talk, but it was mainly addressed in the Shabbos after that, which was Tazria Metzora, which we studied last week. And now we're learning Acharei Mos and Kedoshim. Now, it's what's unique about the first few weeks after when everybody was so overwhelmed by the intensity of that moment of that talk, where no one really knew what to do. What are we supposed to do in order to bring Mashiach, to bring the redemption? The next few weeks, what was unique about the Vabrengens were that the Rebbe did not start the Vabrengens like usually with discussing the Parsha, like he always does, like the Torah portion, the holidays, and so forth. But he started the Vabrengen with the word, with the openly addressing the situation that he had just had mentioned to us, that we're living in the time of the redemption. And as a result of that, we have, in regards and in connection to what we had spoken about, what he had spoken, he says, what we had spoken about earlier, that it's today upon every single Jew to see to it, to do whatever he or she can to bring the redemption. So now let's explore that further. So that was really unique. He dedicated, the Rebbe dedicated, the first 3 weeks, Tazria Metzora, Acharei Mos Kedoshim, and Emor, unique from all the other sichas that we've always heard, other talks, is that he did not address the parsha, even though he does bring in the parsha, but he doesn't start it off with an explanation on the parsha, but is addressing the emergency situation. Now is the time that the Jewish people need to know. Everything has been concluded. Again, it's based on what we said last week. We're living in a time that there's no more obstacles from above for the redemption to happen. It's all, the coast is clear. There's already a green light. Everything is ready. It's only that God wants our participation. He does not want it to be his thing. He wants it to be our thing. And therefore, the Rebbe, speaking and channeling to us the words of Hashem regarding the redemption, is telling us, guys, I'm not going to do it for you, even though perhaps I could do it. I'm not going to do it because it's not about me and it's not about Hashem's project. It's us, humanity as a whole, all of creation, all of existence, particularly the Jewish people that play the biggest role in all of this. We're doing this together. If so, I'm just going to enlighten. I'm going to open this up a little more. So here is the amazing talk. Again, Dvar Malchus, and this is hopefully we're gonna able to crash it into three classes. So the chapter one begins as follows. In regards to the discussion that we had recently regarding the full and complete redemption, in which we are waiting for every day that it should happen, literally, we're expecting Mashiach to come now. And the Rebbe, because the Rebbe so much etches his entire reality in Halacha, which is in Torah law. So the Rebbe says this idea that we ought to expect Mashiach walking into the door now, not one day, but now literally, Rebbe proves it from a law, a Torah law. What's the law? If someone makes a vow that they will not drink wine on the day that Mashiach comes, again, you say, you know what? I don't want to greet. Let's say someone has an issue with alcohol, or an alcoholic, and he's a little worried that Mashiach will arrive and you're going to have to come greet Mashiach, and he's going to be intoxicated, he or she. So they take a vow that the day that Mashiach comes, I'm not going to drink wine. I'm not going to open the bottle. So the law, the moment they made that vow, because being that we have no idea that when Mashiach is coming, he might come today. Since you took upon yourself the vow that you're not going to take, you're not going to drink wine the day Mashiach comes, and you can't drink wine even just on a regular Tuesday. It's not the month of Nisan. It's not the conclusion of the Shemitah year. It doesn't have all the perks. It doesn't have all the special qualities why this is the most conducive day for Mashiach. It's not Achron Shel Pesach. It's not the last day of Pesach. It's not Rosh Hashanah, the day we blow the shofar. It's not Yom Kippur. It's not the Seder night. Not even Purim. A regular day. You now I'll drink wine because Mashiach could come today. So this teaches us that our expecting of Mashiach, we should transcend all calculations and always be ready. It might come in, and that's part of our belief. We wait for Mashiach to come immediately. Now, once we know that Mashiach could come any moment, and again, as the Rebbe explained in the earlier talk, now we don't have any more ups. There's no time restrictions from above. Used to be various different things that Mashiach, that there are certain amounts of times that the Jews will have to spend in exile, the world will have to be in exile. That has passed already. So there's no such. So now what becomes? Now it becomes everybody's that the we had mentioned, the Rebbe says, we had mentioned that there are actions, we have to take actions that every Jew has to do to bring the Geula. We all have to become activists, Geula activists. That means our job and our obsession has to be to bring Mashiach. Therefore, he says it is only fitting to explain the content of the redemption, to give a further, a deeper understanding in the content of the redemption, which is going to make it easier to therefore appreciate what is the work we should be doing to bring the redemption. It was the work that you do to bring something always has to match that the final outcome, the product. What it is that you want to produce, that's the type of work you're going to do. Going to produce a certain kind of event. So you want to, the work you're doing is fitting to that kind of an event that you want to do. If we're going to bring Mashiach and we're going to be working, so you can run around like a madman or running around in circles and do all kinds of stuff that are not related to the redemption. So the Rebbe says, let's understand what redemption is, and then we'll be able to, which means, and I'm gonna just put this in, it's very important because a lot of times you listen to people that talk about redemption, about Mashiach, and they talk a lot about the world's destruction and like the whatever they want to call it, Gog and Magog, and massive wars and destruction, and then everybody's gonna die, and there's all this fear mongering and all this stuff to terrify people. And I hear that sometimes on channels, good rabbis, well-meaning rabbis, but as we're gonna see soon, that's totally off the mark. Even though they're doing people that are trying to do the right thing and to inspire people for redemption and maybe get people to do tshuva. But as we're soon going to see, the work you're doing has to be consistent with the nature of the redemption. And the nature of the redemption is not a destruction. And as we're going to see soon, it's not the destruction of the old world in order to bring in a new world. Even though last week we did learn in our Monday night class that there are certain things that disintegrate. That's a different thing. It's not, but our world is not destroyed in the coming of Mashiach, as we're going to see in a moment how the Rebbe sees the redemption. If this is the case, the Rebbe says, so again, by understanding and appreciating what the redemption is all about, then we will know the work we need to do in order to hasten the redemption. And even more, we will also know how to ready ourselves for the redemption. And so if you're traveling to a certain country, you want to know what the weather is, so you know what you get when you come off the plane over there, if you need a winter coat, or you need, a t-shirt. You want to get in a sense of what it's all going to be about. Is it going to be in the 90s or is it going to be in the 30s? Right? What's the weather going to be like? So we have to know what the weather is going to be like when Mashiach comes, so that we can get ourselves prepared to that state of living. What kind of life is it going to be? What is Mashiach about? So then we can acclimate ourselves. So two things. We prepare ourselves to live already in the days of Mashiach, plus the actions we need to do to bring Mashiach. Okay. And for that, it will help to know what is the Giyul. But the Rebbe is always very simple. He says, well, to know, he's so deep, but so simple. He says, well, to recognize something, the best place to look is not to grab all the books and open them all up and start looking. That's all going to be very helpful. But first, you have to get the general idea. It's always important to look into the name of something, because the name of something will really is the key to opening up its essence, because the name expresses the essence. How do we refer to redemption? There's a lot of words that are used for redemption. For example, when God said he's going to take us out of Egypt, he promised us with four different languages of redemption. I will take you out, I will save you, I will redeem you, I will bring you, I will take you, and I will bring you. Actually, five languages. The fifth one applies already to a farther state, bringing us into the land of Israel. And corresponding to that, we drink four cups of wine on Pesach by night, right? So these are the four languages of redemption. So we have four of them. However, the most prominent of the languages of the redemption is the third one, which God said, and that is V'ga'alti, I will redeem you. Why? We find that that is the most common name for redemption. We know people are not saying we are waiting for the Yetziah. Yetziah means for the going out. People are not saying we are waiting for the Hatzalah, when a guy, God forbid, gets a heart attack or some other thing we call the Hatzalah, right? Everybody's familiar with that. It's an organization that comes to rescue someone when they're in a medical crisis. That's the Hatzalah. But we don't say we're waiting for the Hatzalah to happen. What are people saying is we're waiting for the Geula. Geula means redemption, and that's the word that is used. The Rebbe even brings in the bottom. There is a famous song which Jews have always been singing. It's called Zol Shein Zayin De Geula, Zol Shein Zayin De Geula. Let it be the redemption. That's the way where the most people say the Geula. Every redemption is called Geula. Now, the ultimate redemption, people call it Geula Shalema, the ultimate redemption. And a lot of times we refer to it just by the word Geula. So Geula is the powerful, potent word which will give us the secret of the redemption by analyzing. So the Rebbe says, take a look. This is all in chapter one. Chapter two, the Rebbe says, well, let's take a look at the word Geula. And we see that the makeup of the word Geula is something really astounding. The makeup of the word Geula is the word Gola. Now, Gola means exile. Geula means redemption, which is a very strange phenomenon, that the same word means both exile and redemption. Now the Rebbe points to a midrash. Everything is not just, you know, just saying, you know, this is what I think. Everything he points to a halachic source or a earlier Torah source. In Midrash Rabbah, in the end of Midrash and Pashas Emor, there is a discussion regarding the psukim, the verses in Zechariah and Zechariah, which talk about the prophet seeing a big menorah, a big candelabra. And it says that there was, when he saw the candelabra, the menorah, gold menorah, there were two bowls. The gula rot was a big bowl with two olive branches or two olive trees, and that were pressing. The oil was being pressed into this bowl. It's called the gula al rosha. So simply, it's a vision. Now, every prophetic vision is a metaphor. So the sages in the midrash are trying to decipher the metaphor. And when it gets to the bowl on top, so the question is, what was the metaphor in that bowl? But the word it uses for the bowl is vigula. So there are two sages, an argument, two opinions. One sage says that the word vigula means exile. So this was coming to be some kind of inspiration or some kind of a communication or instruction that God was giving the Jewish people for the period of exile. So the bowl, which is called the gula, is supposed to kind of bring us to the awareness of exile, which is the word gola. Another one of the sages says, no, the gula that's on top is actually from the word geula. So not exile, but redemption. So you see over here that the sages clearly are taking one word, same word in the scripture, and it can be interpreted to mean exile, and it can be interpreted to be redemption. Now, if exile and redemption are both in the same word, that would really mean that the exile and redemption can't be too far from each other. They can't be worlds apart, because if they were worlds apart, then how can they both share the same name? The name is to make it even stronger, the Rebbe says. But for a moment, it's really astonishing, he says, because you couldn't have two things farther than each other. Exile is pain, suffering, darkness, and all the concealments. Concealment on God, the concealment of this, all the heartbreak, all the suffering, disease and illness and death, and persecution and all, everything, and terrorism and whatever kind of darkness and abuse, it's all exile. And redemption is bliss and ecstasy and revelation and joy and happiness and unity and harmony and peace and lovingness. It's all there. You couldn't have two things farther apart, and yet they share the same word. Hold it. Now, before we get to the question, there is one difference between the word. It's not the exact same word. In the word gula, which is the word gola, which means exile, it's spelled gimel vav lamed hey. Now, in the Hebrew letters, gimel vav lamed hey. In the word geula, it's spelled gimel aleph vav lamed hey. So it has an aleph in it. It's the only difference. It's an al. The Rebbe says, what's that al? There is an addition. There is something added to the word gola, which spells the word geula. So what is added, which makes it, transforms it from exile to redemption? All it is one letter, aleph. So what's that aleph? So he brings from his great-great-great-grandfather, the Alter Rebbe, in Likutei Torah, the book we learn always on Thursday nights. The Alter Rebbe Likutei Torah says, aleph is alufo shel olam, is referring, aleph is the first letter of the aleph base, which means, if it's first, it means the primary being, referring to God, which is the alufo shel olam. He is the chief of the world. The word aleph, in addition to it being the first letter, also has a meaning. Aluf means a chief, which makes sense. That's why it's not who marches first. When you have the whole clan is coming, the whole tribe is coming. Who marches in the front? Who is number one? The chief. So in the world, from all the letters, which letter is the chief letter? Aleph. It's the first letter. In content, what does it mean? God creates the whole world with the letters. So what would the Aleph mean? Aleph would mean that's the symbol of the chief of the world, the leader of the world is God. So Aleph is Alufa Shalom. So what then is the difference between Goyla and Geula? Goyla is the world, and the Geula is the work of putting, how do we take from Goyla and make Geula? How do we take exile and make it into redemption? By inserting or revealing the Aleph. There is an Aleph that needs to be revealed. Which Aleph? We have to reveal the God, the godliness. We have to reveal the God particle, as they were calling it. We have to uncover the divine. In where? Now, where is the divine? Where do you have to either insert it or uncover it? But more or less, more as he's explaining, it's uncovering. Where are you uncovering it from? Exile is a godless state. Hashem seems not to be there. It's godless. That's why there is such atrocities happening. That's why there was someone today who decided to ram his car into innocent in Jerusalem streets and next to the Machne Yisrael and then the marketplace. Guy comes and runs his car, and God forbid, and that's because he doesn't fear God. God seems to be, is not there. There's no such a thing as God not being. In general, God is everywhere, and there can't be an existence without God. But in particularly, you would think an exile is like a godless state. No, the sages tell us that wherever the Jewish people go to exile, God comes along with them. Wherever they go, God is with them. They go to Babylonia, God is with them. They go to Persia, God was with them. They go to Rome, God is with them. That means God is there. He's just in hiding. So Geula is when we uncover God in the hiding. And then we have Geula. That's the idea. But then he begins to unpack the idea by asking the question. This doesn't make any sense. How can it be that the same situation you have by before, nothing changes. All you have is the revelation, the extraction of God, of the Aleph, and that it changes the entire world from a dark world to a bright world, from a painful world to a joyous, blissful world. How can that be? To make the question stronger, it's not only that some of the particles of the redemption are taken from the dark world. That would mean if we would pick maybe two or three letters from the dark world and we would bring them in to the, say that the new world, the world of redemption, is not completely radically removed. There has to be some components of the old world that was put into the new world. Like, you're going to demolish, but you're going to save certain artifacts, so to speak. There is going to be a great demolition. The whole dark world has to be destroyed because it's a satanic world. It's a demonic world. It's a world full of evil and terrible things. That has to be bulldozed. You want to save certain artifacts, certain elements of it, and insert it in the new world. If that would be the case, then there would be one or two letters from the word exile, let's say the Gimel and the Lamin, and we would take it and put it into another word. It's not that way. The whole entire exile, the full word, Gimel, Vav, Lamin, Hey, is all transported into the redemption. The whole word, transplanted. More than that, not only are all the letters transplanted, but the word is primarily made up of these letters. You might say there's a whole lot of new stuff. Let's say that the word for redemption would be a word of 10 letters. And four of those letters would be the exiles. It would be at least six, the majority. Six would be new letters and four would be the old letters. The Rebbe says, no, no, no. The majority of the word, four out of the five letters is the same old word, which is Gola. Now let's take that even stronger. Sometimes you take the components of something, but you have, because it's organized in such a terrible way, you'll keep the ingredients, the essential ingredients, but you'll remix it and redesign it and create a whole new design. That would mean that we would have to take the word, like in Scrabble, and disassociate the letters and then rebuild it again. Take the components of the exile, demolish it, and then rebuild a new world. Good, you're using the old ingredients, but you're going to recycle it completely. And the recycling is a decomposing of what was. The Rebbe says that if that would be the case, then at least the structure of the letters, the organization of the letters should have been different. But in the word Gola and Geula, we keep all the letters exactly in the same order. This is wild. The same order, same letters, same order. Everything. Even more so, the most dominant letter of a word is always the first letter. Like we spoke about the letter Aleph, it's the chief letter. And every word is great emphasis on the first letter. Sometimes we emphasize the last letter. First and last, but we have first letter. That's why we find a lot of times when the Torah wants to give you a code, we make up, like God's name sometimes is hidden in the Megillah, Megillah's Esther, God's name is hidden. It's hidden in a sequence of words where the acronym, which means the first letter of each word, spells something out. Why in the first letter? Why not the second letter? Why not the third? The answer is because the first is the most prominent letter. So between the word Gola, which means exile, and the word Geula, we're actually keeping the Gimel, which is the main as letter number one. So we have this, we have the first letter, which is the dominant letter, being exactly the same, not a different leader, the same leader. The same leader, the same leading letter is there. Not only that, we have all the letters intact. All the letters. We don't skip, we don't drop one letter of the exile. That's great. At least, okay, so you're taking the majority, but one or two components of the exile is bad, so let's drop that. No, no, no. There's not one letter that is erased. It's not like we exchange a letter. No, no, no. You're bringing all the letters. You're bringing them all exactly as they are. You're not even switching the order. And the entire word makes up most of the word of the redemption. But there has to be some difference. What then changes it from exile to redemption? Small little tweak. You turn on the light. You open up the word with inserting an aleph. You suddenly find God. And when you discover God in what you always had, that's what redemption is. Redemption is not we're moving away into a new reality. Just uncovering the divine and the reality that we have already. And then what was dark, painful, miserable becomes blissful, delightful, beautiful, perfect. Second hit. Give me 1 second. Please forgive a minute. This is just important. So, so what does this mean? This is amazing teaching. So this teaches us, so now we go to chapter 3. So this tells us, the Rebbe says, based on all this, we'll understand that Geula, the redemption, does not mean that when we leave the exile, going out of the exile means that our activities and our lives and our possessions and all the stuff that make up life that we have now are suddenly abandoned, and we receive and we go into a new unfamiliar world. God takes you away from your apartment, from your house, from your own kitchen, your own dining room, your own bedroom, your own garden. And you have a nice garden. You did a lot of gardening. And now God is going to tell you, you know what, in Israel, come with me to Israel. In Israel, I'm going to give you, I know you made a nice garden. I see you love gardening. I'm going to give you a beautiful place with a beautiful garden. Yeah, but it's not my garden. Okay, God said you'll learn to love it. And then you'll start making it your garden. No. If you made a nice garden, it's your garden. And guess what? It's coming with you. It's your garden. How will it come with you? Let God figure that out. That's not your business. But your garden is your garden. And your work that you've done, all the beautiful things in your life, your home is your home. Everything that you have in your life is yours. It's just that what's going to happen is that all these things are going to become a million times better than they are now. And the reason for that is because redemption doesn't mean a new reality. Redemption means that there is something that exists and that But it is confined. The exile means a form of imprisonment. It is confined. It is constricted. And redemption means that its constrictions and limitations and confinement elements disappear. It goes out from its constrictions and its limitations. And therefore, it can truly be what it really is with all of its potential and all of its power. Like a human being, when a human being is constricted, when a person is redeemed from prison, person is in jail or in prison, it's the most horrible time of a person's life because they can't be themselves. They're confined to other people's agendas, other people's dictates, other people's rules. When you're free, there's not a new person here. It's the same person that was. You have a person who's enormously talented. A person is an incredible musician. Let's say, imagine, a person is an unbelievable musician, but they were taken into captivity. So they don't have their violin. They don't have their guitar. They can't play the music. They can't compose. Or even if they want to, they can't. They want to sing at night or they can't because they can't. The rules doesn't let them. Or even middle of the day, they would be silenced. So now what happens when they're redeemed? Is that this person with this talent, with this ability to sing, can actually play their music now to the fullest. They can actualize themselves, let's say, as a musician, to the highest, most fullest potential. That's in a regular way, if you think about someone being who's constricted, being redeemed. So the Rebbe said that's the meaning of every redemption. When we're talking about the ultimate redemption means that all of existence is liberated from some force that's constraining and constricting it. What's going out of the constriction? Everything. All of reality is going out of constriction. Everything goes out of constriction. And therefore, without leaving anything left. So in terms of the Jewish people, the Rebbe says, it means that every single Jew that's in exile, as we know for thousands of years we're in exile, we're not in our homeland, we're not able to do the sacrifice, to serve God, to go to the Holy Temple and serve Him the way we ought to serve Him in the Holy Temple and do all the mitzvot that we would like to do as Jews. And some people don't even know that they're lacking that because there is, the exile has done such a deep job on so many people that they don't even realize that they have a spiritual connection to God, and that God, and that they, and they have, and they have, and there's such a value, they're so incredibly valuable in the fact that they have a Jewish soul and therefore have an opportunity to serve God. I'm talking first about the Jewish people, I'll talk about later, he talks about the entire world. So some people who very much would like to do all the mitzvot, who would love to be able to study Torah, let's say as a Jew should, a person has the, God has given us we cannot do today because they're dependent on Jerusalem and on a temple and all these mitzvot. So there is a constriction on our Judaism. We're not free. It's not circumstances not related to us. And there's other constrictions, even those mitzvot that we would love to do. For example, there's a mitzvah to study Torah all the time, but because of the deficiencies of divine blessings during the time of exile, which makes it that we have to spend so much time trying to make a living. So we don't have the luxury to study the Torah, which is God's infinite wisdom, all the time. And there's so much of our day that we're too busy doing something else, we can't afford it. And even when we could afford it, so much of our mind has already been drained and exhausted. So how much brain power do we have left to do so? I'm just giving a little example of all the constrictions that exist on a person as a Yid, as a Jew, in his or her pursuit of their connection to God. The redemption is going to come, and the redemption is going to give us back a temple. It's going to enable us to communicate with God through all the avenues of communication. We're not going to have the limitations and the constrictions of having to work for a living and do all these things, because God's abundance will be an enormous, it will flow with all of its enormity, with all the blessing. And maybe with a tiny little bit of work, or maybe we won't have to do our work at all, and there will be already plenty in order for our people to be. Today's days we're seeing, as we discussed last week, with the advance of computers and technology, everything could be done on its own, and we have a totally freeing up all of our headspace to be able to study, learn, and get closer to God. In addition to that, let's talk about prayer. Prayer is supposed to be a deep meditation, a deep connection to God, and now it's so hindered. We get hindered. What do we get hindered? We're so attached to earth. We're so attached to our bodies. Our physical bodies are so distracting. So when Mashiach will come and our bodies will be subjugated to the soul, and our bodies will soon see, will be in totally synchronization with God's will. So then it won't bother us. So then when we open up the siddur to pray, we're going to be able to liberate ourselves in prayer, which means completely pray the way we should pray. So just an example of a person being able to come out of these constrictions and then being able to realize, but they'll say, not only these people who are excited to go out of exile, who feel they're in exile, they want to go out of exile, even those who don't know they're in exile. I mean, people that have gotten so entrenched in material, physical existence, which think that that is the optimum of life, a successful career and making money and being able to travel the world and having nice cruises and dinners and so on and so forth and other things. And that's it. That's what they cap out. But yet they possess a holy soul, a godly soul, and their soul inside of them wants something more. But now it can't because they're not even communicating to their own into their own body. The soul is really locked up in a prison. So when Mashiach will come, everybody will turn to God. Even those that till now don't even think that there's a need for it. So, and there won't be even one person, as there's a famous song, go, no Jew will be left behind. Not one Jew will be left in exile. That means once Mashiach comes, all hearts, all Jewish hearts will turn on to serving God. Everybody will really excite. So that means whatever, the liberation is going to be to everyone and to everything. But now he takes it further. He says, not only the people, but also all of their possessions. That means whatever they own now, it's not like we your business is going to be left behind and you're going to go to Israel. No, you're taking along your business with you. Taking away. Now, you might not need to occupy yourself with it because you'll have other people and other, and as we said, machinery taking care of it. All of it can become computerized. But whatever it is that you have, that you felt that you built up, that you developed, and it's a good thing, and you, it's all coming. Nothing is staying behind. Everything is redeemed. Everything is coming along. And the Rebbe, and now he takes it even further. He says, when we say it's going to be a redemption for all of the, the redemption is the redemption for all of existence, for all of reality. And therefore, it's for all human beings. It's for all of mankind and womankind. It's for all of the world. It's for every single, everything will come out of exile. Is everything will come out of its constrictions and its limitations and its hindrances that are blocking it. How will it all come out? How will it come out? What's the secret of it all? The secret of it all is that the godliness that's at the core of all of existence, because without godliness, if something doesn't have godliness, it doesn't exist. The nucleus of all of existence, everything, every object, every person, every being, every animal, every bug, every creature and every being has a spark of the divine that's a true essence. In the time of exile, that divine particle, that divine energy is concealed and obscured. That means that the creature or being or person is disconnected unless they try very hard. But even when we try hard, our connection to our divine spark is only is very narrow in the time of exile because of the essential condition of exile, which doesn't allow that godliness to fully manifest itself. So even those that are very spiritual sensitive are only with a limit. When Mashiach comes, those limitations will be removed, and the godliness of all of existence will surface to the will come up to the surface. And as a result of that, that energy, that godly content will come into all of existence and to everything. And as a result, and it will liberate all of creation, all of existence from its confinements and from its subjugations to external things that are trapping it. Meaning to say, the Rebbe uses some interesting words over here. He says that when the godly particle and the divine element of something is concealed, then automatically we go into subjugation. We become subjugated to what we call force, to the natural, to the forces of nature. The forces of nature itself become the prison when we enslave ourselves to the forces of nature, but that's only because we're lacking in our own consciousness of the godly. When the godly is not readily available and experienced in something, then it becomes subjugated to the to dictates of what we call the natural world. So when we're talking about a prison, we don't have to have some guard on the outside. It's being enslaved to nature. Let me take a simple example of what he's talking about. The truth of the matter is that God created the world, and he takes full responsibility to feed and to nurture and to sustain every creature. That's the bottom, that's the truth. And the truth is that as we say that when we say that after the blessing, I'm talking about the ultimate truth. Whether we don't, whether we're conscious enough to see it, that's a different story. It's an exile. We're not conscious of it. We're not seeing. We're seeing a distorted reality. In truth, God sustains every creature and every being. That means every dollar you make, God is giving it to you. Every penny you make, me, you, each and every one of us. And it's not really the penny that you're making or the dollar that you're making. It's the God is sustaining us in the food that we're eating. It's the money that we make translates into buying food or eat or preparing food, and then that food nurtures us. But who's really sustaining us through the food and through the money and through all of this? It's all God, and God is orchestrating every moment. It's literally, if we would see the truth, we would see God sitting in front of us every single day with a spoon, like a mother sits and feeds her little infant. It's all shrouded and shrouded and shrouded in different things that look like cause and effect. I have to call this one and I make with this one and I make a deal and I make a business. It's all, these are all a charade. It's all a fake. It's all a place where God can conceal and hide himself for whatever reason. Now, during this time of this charade and this concealment, what happens? we start attributing significance to the external methods through which God is giving us our livelihood. Yes, God is giving you your livelihood through your business, but it's God giving it through the business. But the moment we start thinking that the business itself has power, has significance, and that's really the cause of my sustenance and the sustenance of my family, and as I start giving credence to it, then I become subjugated and enslaved to it. Then obviously I don't have too much time to pursue my relationship with God, because I tell God I don't have time for you now because I've got to run out and do my business, because my business is what's giving me my success in my life. So what do we see from here? The distortion is what's causing the enslavement. People don't have time to develop themselves spiritually, to pursue a deep bond with God in prayer and in studying and getting to know the greater God's who God desires so much to be in a relationship with us and enables us to be in a relationship. But we're too busy. We're too busy worshiping all the stuff we think is really responsible for our well-being. Well, in exile, that's the situation. That's the way God set it up, because he's concealed. The moment it's liberated, then we will see that everything was God to begin with. So if we'll need business, if you want your business and you feel that your business, whatever you're doing, is contributing and making, you're producing something that is helpful for people, and therefore it's a good thing, fine, you'll continue doing that. But you'll recognize it for what it is. It's a means that God has given you to help the world, and it's a means through that which God is feeding you through that profitable thing. But you realize it's God being there the entire time. So it won't be in any way enslavement. It won't be a constriction. It will be liberated. Quite on the contrary. It will have so much more content now, because you'll see God every day in that business. You'll feel that energy. You'll see it's his power pulsating through you, through your mind, through your innovation, and through your business, and through your connections that you're making with customers and with consumers and whatever it is. You'll see the godly in it. So it will be so much richer, better, and more beautiful. That means it came out of its constriction. Same as with our bodies. Just like our body as its own. Today's days, our body becomes a burden many times. The body is a burden because the body becomes, we see the body as an entity for itself. I have my physical existence, and my physical body is important in it of itself for its own thing. And therefore, when my body says, I'm hungry, I need this, or the body is seeking a certain type of pleasure or something, we kind of, where the sometimes we step out of line because of our body. And that itself ends up damaging the body, because if we give into the whims of the body in terms of overeating, overindulgences, whatever those overindulgences might be, because they make the body feel good. But this distortion can only be when we're living in a consciousness where we're not seeing the divine content of the body. But when we recognize that the body is a instrument through which the deepest will of God can be realized, when the physical human body can express the divine, and it's shaped in the image of God, and it can express godly God in a way that nothing else can express, and then the body becomes, its entire identity is an instrument for a mitzvah, it's an instrument for holiness. And all the physical functions then are in sync with what they're meant to be, and they don't carry us away into overindulgences, which are never healthy for us and distracting us from what we need to do. That means that our body is liberated. Our physical existence will not be in any way a distortion to our mission and our role and existence in that godly realm. Quite on the contrary, it's an enhancer. It's part of it. So the body will never be misused. We will never overeat, because the eating will always be purposeful. We will always, and it's not like we won't have the pleasure in the food, but the pleasure in the eating will be a godly pleasure. We will sense the divine delight in the eating that we're eating. I'm taking the idea, the Rebbe doesn't say all of this, I'm taking that and fleshing it out a little bit, that we get a little bit of an understanding of what he's saying. Let's take the other most dominating distraction in our lives, sexual desire. So today's days, when the body is disconnected from the soul, so our sexuality and our desire for that pleasure takes on its own life. And therefore, it can lead us into terrible situations, into very negative situations. But when the body is liberated and the divine We turn on the Aleph. That's what the Rebbe is talking about. We illuminate the Aleph. The lights turn on. And the Aleph is revealed. The divine element is real. So then it will be revealed, the divine particle in sexual life. And what is that? So first of all, procreation. And procreation is the highest element. God allows you to be godly on the way that God is godly. God creates. And here God says, be my partner and create with me. You can create something from nothing. So imagine if that consciousness is there in intimacy. The mind expansiveness, the awesomeness of the experience. And that's one part of it, is the procreation. And we know that even if we're not in a state where we're still having children or you're past the a woman or a man are past their state of having, first of all, Mashiach comes, the bodies will be strong and healthy and we can have children and on and on and on. But even if you're not bringing and creating in the physical world, we know that spiritually, through a union of a man and a woman, when the two come together, the two energies come together, you're creating spiritual energies. And you're creating spiritual beings. Souls are being created, so to speak, are being emanated. So in that action, there's nothing more beautiful than creating life. But we understand that there is never a possibility for that energy or that pleasure to seek fulfillment outside of what its content is. Because when the content will be felt so strongly, it there's no room for it. It's not even a thought. It's not even a possibility. And that's regarding the idea of having children from it. But then there is the essential soul connection and bonding of two human beings, of two souls on the deepest innermost level, where their souls are becoming unified as one and allowing for a deeper divine energy, which is mimicking and reflecting this powerful spiritual unions of the spiritual worlds. Well, if only we would be able to feel that once in our intimacies, then there wouldn't even be a possibility, God forbid, for wasting that energy or directing that energy or getting or allowing that to be anywhere other than in the context of what it was set up to be, in a loving relationship between a husband and a wife in which their souls bond on the deepest level. So here we took business, we took food and the body in general, we took sexual aspects of our life, and when you turn on the divine element of it, you open it up to the Aleph, to its true godly essence, which that godly essence is the truth of it today as well. But now the divine is concealed. And when Mashiach will come, the whole idea of redemption is that Aleph, that true divine essence of everything, is suddenly revealed and opened up. And as a result of that, nothing changes and everything changes. The same world. You got your same wife, your spouse, the same family, but everything you have and everything good doesn't mean that it won't be able to be enriched with much greater riches and wealth and all that. But whatever you have and you feel is your accomplishments, and you feel it's your talents, you have certain talents and certain aspects, that will only be increased because the divine part of it will come out and its true nature will come out to express the Creator. It will be so much more potent and so much more powerful. That is the idea that the Rebbe is developing in this talk. Now, I want to just connect it, because when we're looking back at what we discussed last week, if you remember, the Rebbe starts developing this theme in the last week's talk in Parshas Tazria Metzora, when he's talking that the redemption is the exile. The exile is a pregnancy for the redemption. It's the same energy. It's just in the beginning, when we don't see the divine, it comes as a dark. But when we are able to bring it into the vessels of Tikkun, that we spoke last week, so then we can open up it to its true nature. So it's the same theme and the same idea, but being further elucidated and explained. This idea that when Mashiach comes, there isn't going to be anything new, but it's the same world, but only redeemed. The Rebbe says, it's like you see this in the Rambam, in Maimonides. Rambam in the Laws of Kings gives us the paskins, which means he gives us the halachic conclusion that what? That do not think that in the days of Mashiach, something will of the conduct of the world will change, or there'll be anything new in creation, that there has to be a new world that will grow. In other words, no, the Rambam says the world will continue conducting itself the way it was in the past. And then he continues and he says, the rabbis have said, Maimonides says, the rabbis have said, there's no difference between our world and the world of Mashiach and the days of Mashiach, only subjugation to the nations. Simply, you can read it, that we're not subjugated to the nations. Deeper meaning, we're not subjugated to the external, superficial facade that there is other existence other than divine content. We're not subjugated to that anymore. We're subjugated only to one being, and that is our Creator. And as a result, and therefore, what is going to be? So Maimonides says we're not going to be subjugated anymore to the nations. What will be? What? All the nations in the world, all of mankind, in the words of the Rambam, v'yachzeru kulam l'dasa emes, everybody will return to a true monotheism, the real and absolute belief, the true belief, and that is the belief in one God, which is the Jewish belief, and Mashiach will correct the entire world to serve Hashem together. As it says, and then I will convert all the nations into, there's a verse, the verse is in Sefania, where it says, I'm going to convert the nation, Safa Beruda, with a clear tongue, Likrei Kulam B'Shem Hashem, to all of them to call out in the name of God, and to serve Him with one shoulder. In other words, the world is only going to become godly conscious. Same people, same world, same nations, countries will exist, won't become a demolition. Europe won't be destroyed. This one won't be the same thing, the world. But people's consciousness will change. There will be a shift. And everybody will serve one Creator. In other words, everybody will be in touch. What's this one Creator? This one God? No, be in touch with the truth, that there is a being, a supernal being, which is higher than the world, above all, and He is. And we're all going to be unified into that, in His, and recognizing our role in revealing and uncovering and expressing that true singular being that is at the core of everything that's coming out in our multiple worlds through all of us together. So based on this, the Rebbe says it's understood why the word Geula includes within it the word Gola, but with an extra Aleph, meaning to say the Geula, the redemption, is not interrupting the service of the work that we did in the exile, but on the contrary, the whole idea of the exile is to lift up the world that we have now, the Gola, the Go world, through redeeming all aspects of the exile, and to make from it, from Gola, to make from it Geula, to make redemption. Through what? Nothing new. Through just opening it up and revealing the Aleph in it. We remove, I'm just reading the words so you get to hear the powerful words over here. We remove the concealment and the obstructions from the which are currently confining the elements of the world, which make it an exiled world, which is covering up on its true existence and its true purpose. We reveal the chief of the world, which is the divine spark of it, the origins of everything, and the purpose of everything. The purpose of all aspects of exile, which God created. So from the exile itself, the old world becomes the new world, but it gets a whole new life to it. Geula is the revelation of the Aleph within the exile. The revelation of truth and the pnimius, which means the inner element of existence from all aspects of exile. And in all actions, one of the things that sometimes can become a hesitant, first people can have reluctance regarding the redemption, is people who are really working on themselves and they're really accomplishing and they have community. For example, they built a community, they built a structure, they have adherents and followers, and he or she's inspiring them. Suddenly you're going to give me a Mashiach. He's going to steal all my people to him. I'm going to become a nobody. I have nothing to teach anymore. Who am I going to influence? Everybody's going to be so like, almost like, why should I want that? The answer is no. That too is going to be redeemed. Your influence and your community and everything you're having on the people is going to be enhanced a million times more. Going to be uplifted because you're going to see the real power of what you were doing. That really, in essence, everything you were doing was leading to the redemption, was bringing all these people closer to Mashiach. If you're teaching them Torah, that means you're bringing them closer to the divine. So we're going to get an enrichment. You're going to get an enormous enrichment in the actions that we were doing. All the good actions that we were doing are suddenly going to become a million times more meaningful because we're going to appreciate their true value. The mitzvahs we were doing in exile, we didn't see its godly content. We knew I'm doing a mitzvah, I'm fulfilling God's will, but we didn't see the godly infusion that happens in the physical world every time you're doing the mitzvah. Now you will see it. And now when you'll do that mitzvah again, now you're going to be able to do it with so much more energy and so much more excitement and fervor because we appreciate what it is. We will reveal how it's all revealing, all of creation and everything that ever existed, everything that God created was for his glory. So all this comes together as one incredible, unified existence, revealing the singular essence. And nothing can be outside of that. Because everything that exists, exists within existence. And since existence, the underlying reality of existence is God, that ultimately everything is contributing, everything is part, is another note in that symphony. And one note missing, the whole symphony is off. So everything is necessary. At that time, the truth of it all is going to be revealed. Now in comes the fourth chapter where the Rebbe asks a question. But you know what? Let's leave that for tomorrow. Okay. Till then, we should see what it is in our own life that we can rethink and think what is the godly particle that's in that. And say, you know what? From now on, that particular area or aspect of my life, let me start living it in a redeemed level, in a Mashiach level. Let me not look how things in my life can change by circumstances changing or someone take, but in everything that I have right now, or pick one thing that you have right now, which maybe is a nuisance or maybe is a difficulty and a hardship, and try to uncover and unlock the godly that's within that. Be'ez Hashem, we'll continue tomorrow.